Come on, man. We need to work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll discuss all the latest with respect to the New York Giants. A number of news items to get to off the top. We'll then get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat as well. Tomorrow, Justin Tuck will be joining Paul and I on the program, so we'll have him to break down his Giants career, his retirement announcement, and so forth. He's also going to answer some fan questions. So with that being said, if you have questions that you want us to ask Justin Tuck, send them into hashtag AskJustin. Ask Tuck, excuse me. That's the hashtag, and you can send that in beforehand today, and we'll compile a laundry list of questions for tomorrow's program. Number two, there are multiple media reports out there that the Giants are going to cut three players in particular, that being Jeff Schwartz, Will Beatty, and John Beeson. Nothing is official from the Giants' perspective, but there are media reports out there, so that obviously we will get into a little bit with respect to that, and we'll also hit on the most notable free agent impact players from 2015. Class. Dan Salamone, one of our top writers, wrote a piece where he went over the top five plays for Giants free agents. Paul and I will look back at who came to town last season and the type of impact that they had on last year's squad.
Well, you know, this is the time, Lance, beginning yesterday, the time when teams start making these announcements and these moves. For example, the Raiders cut safety Nate Allen yesterday, the former Philadelphia Eagle, who had an injury-plagued 2015 season, and even when he was in there, did not do all that well. But now there is a 30 and under-aged safety who has started in this league, who is now available and out there to be had. I believe somebody else got cut also yesterday. The Titans, I think, might have cut a safety as well. But the bottom line is, this is the time you're going to start seeing names floated out there. And it's what we were trying to tell you for the last month when everybody was saying, all right, Giant season's over. Let's start talking about free agents. Well, guess what? The list is fluid. We tried to tell you folks that. The list has already started to move yesterday. It's moving again today. It will move again tomorrow. And so your list of free agents is not concrete. And that's why it's very difficult to just assess, well, how much money do the Giants have? How much money does any team have? And exactly how do they want to shape their roster going forward, including their plans for the draft? I would say one thing to you, Lance. Every team, at least the teams that I know of who have been responsible over the years, actually have a guy in their personnel department who spends a great deal of time researching every other team, everybody else's roster. And what that guy does as part of his job is to look at not only the rosters of all the other teams, but he's in the pro personnel department. He will look at the injury situation for those teams. He will look at the contract situations for all of those teams and all of those rosters and all of the people who they think are going to be coming up. They'll also look at salary cap implications. And this way, they actually have, I don't want to say it's a list, but they have in their minds, every team in the league, again, that's responsible, has in their minds a list of guys who they believe at least have a reasonable chance of being released or cut in a salary cap purge. Now, when they're formulating their plans for the offseason and the draft and free agency, part of that has to go into the equation because even though they're not cut yet, if they do have strong, reasonable evidence, or at least very strong, educated guesses about some guys who are going to be out there on the market, for example, it is believed that Mario Williams is going to be released by the Bills.
Yeah.
Okay, we could tell you that without having inside NFL knowledge. That's been made public for weeks now. They believe that's not going to be a match, and Mario Williams is going to be set free. Now, that's the kind of intel that I'm talking about, although it's on a business level. It's on an NFL level. It's on a very high, very much informed level beyond what we're reading in the papers and on the web. So trust me when I tell you, even though we may all of a sudden see a name pop up and say, oh, wow, this guy just got cut, chances are better than not that the teams around the league already had a pretty good idea that that guy's name might be appearing on the list at some point during the offseason. They're not caught by surprise, usually.
There are a few surprises, but
sometimes,
for the most part, based on league sources and so forth, you tend to get a general idea of who's going to be out there.
Exactly. And so I give you that for no other reason than to give you a better frame of reference for the understanding of the landscape of what has now started to happen this week with guys' names being thrown into the pool.
Michael Griffin, by the way, is the tight end safety.
Right.
That was let go yesterday, who you were alluding to.
He's been like 8 or 9 year veteran.
Correct, absolutely. February 8th, Monday, was the first day where you could start cutting players,
right,
and the waiver wire started over again. The calendar doesn't start until March in terms of,
yes,
free agency, but the waiver wire goes into effect already this week. That's why we're seeing guys cut, based on how the calendar plays out for the start of the new campaign.
Well, this is a great thing. We might as well tell people now, as long as we're dealing with the whole free agency thing, the dates for free agency are as follows. March 6th, teams can start opening talks with the agents for free agents. Remember, last year they put in a separate
period
deadline, which allowed for folks to talk without agreeing to a deal. That's March 6th. March 9th is the day you can actually begin to sign free agents. That's also the day where your cap has to be hard. So those are your two dates to keep in mind, March 6th and March 9th. We move on.
February 16th, while we're on important dates, just so you get an idea, the first day that you can start designating franchise or transition players is going to be February 16th. So that will be in a few days. Then you have the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis from the 23rd to the 29th. We'll have coverage from Indianapolis coming up here on Giants.com. And then Paul just threw out some of the free agent notable dates. So things are going to start to get busy over the next few weeks between the waiver wire, between the combine, as well as the start of free agency.
And as long as we're talking about free agency, and we were talking yesterday about potentially some safeties who might be attractive on the list, I did do some research on Eric Weddle. And yes, you know, he's made it clear that he doesn't even expect to talk to anyone from the Chargers organization again. He is done with them. But he also made it very clear, if you read his quotes from the San Diego papers in the last couple of weeks, he wants to be on a team that he believes can win a Super Bowl and pretty quickly. He wants to go to a contender. The speculation out there is that he would wind up going to a team like Denver or Kansas City or New England or Pittsburgh or one of those teams, because obviously they're contenders. Whether or not he sees the Giants as a fit or the Giants see him as a fit, hey, we can't tell you that right now. Nobody knows the answer to that. But at least from what we're hearing out of San Diego, Weddle is looking to go to some place where he can get a ring pretty quickly.
Well, and that's why that goes back to some of the conversations, Paul, that you and I have had, when it does seem like it's a good fit for a team, and it seems as if financially you can afford that player, there's still so many other factors that go into it from the player's perspective as to whether or not they want to come to the team. And you were referencing, I know earlier in the week we were talking about Devin McCourty, which financially may have worked out, but you don't know his mindset in terms of whether he wanted to go back to New England, and that was priority number one. If that's priority number one for a player, it doesn't matter how attractive the offer is from another team, he's going to go there.
It's going to be very hard to pry him away if his heart is set on going back there.
Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. In terms of the other topic that I wanted to address, free agents from 2015. I mentioned Dan Salamone put up an article on Giants.com. You can check that out. Top five plays,
yes,
from this past season. And this is the time where you start to discuss free agency and so forth. And we'll get to your phone calls here momentarily. When you look at last year's free agent class, Paul, let's go offense and defense here. Who do you think the two most impactful guys out of that free agent class?
And it's not even just a matter of offense and defense. You got to throw special teams in there.
Well,
because
one guy in particular,
Dwayne Harris, is a double winner.
Yes, exactly.
And you know what, folks? For the critics who kind of smirked, laughed, shook their heads at that deal, what is the first thing that at least I know I tried to tell you. I don't know how many folks elsewhere agreed with me on the program, but this is a guy who is a multi-tool player who's going to help you in a variety of ways, and he's still young, and he still has his best football in front of him. And in addition to that, I saw articles at the end of the season where the Cowboys were absolutely disgusted that they had lost him, because the impact, not just on the Giants, but on his loss to the Cowboys this season, was felt throughout the entire course of the campaign. There was no question that Dwayne Harris was an invaluable signing, and if anybody still thinks that that was not a great move, I'm sorry, I don't think we can have a conversation, because I'm not buying it.
Well, there's a number of games to me that his performance stood out. You talk about the special teams returns. Number one against the Cowboys, which turned out to be the game-winning score, the kickoff return. He had the punt return against the Jets. And then the Saints game, where he scores two touchdowns and he left the game because he was banged up, only to return a little bit later and help contribute to that offensive clinic. His value really skyrocketed this year. At least to me, the Giants got the most out of that deal, given the fact that there were other injuries at the receiving core. So he wasn't solely brought in, Paul, as that four-man guy that plays on all special teams.
Yeah.
He also turned in to be that second wide receiver more often than not.
You know what? They thought that he could play some receiver when they signed him. Again, that was part of the value component when they brought that contract to the table. Little did they know he would do as much as he did. But don't underestimate this, Lance, and you've been in that locker room too. Talking to the guys who dress in there, they told you how energized Dwayne Harris made them on special teams. There is a belief on special teams, when you got a guy back there, that at any time you can change the course of a game because you can make a big play, because that guy is the one back there trying to get that extra yard or trying to burst for another 20 yards or whatever it is that he's going to be able to do. He gave this special teams unit so much extra life, made everybody else on that unit block better and be more excited about what they were doing. He lifted the entire unit up by his presence. Dwayne Harris, I am a big, big fan. Now, the only bad news was, because he was then overused as a receiver, they had to pull back a little bit in the second half of the season on specials. And they never really got the best value out of him as a gunner, because he's a really good gunner, too.
Because they had to hold him back, like you said, to play on all four special teams, plus play just about every down as a receiver.
He was beaten to a pulp. By the middle of the season, this guy was walking around during the week like, holy smokes, they're putting him together with scotch tape. And then every Sunday, he'd go out there and just play his butt off. You got to love a guy like that.
Oh, no doubt about that. But that's also why adding Shane Vereen, Paul, helped from a special teams perspective, because he was able to fill the void left behind when Harris had to be held back at times.
And there, it, in my mind, is your second most valuable free agent
overall,
addition last
season. You're not classifying offense and defense.
I'm going to go overall.
You're just going to go overall.
I don't think you can, because there was some bleeding going on there between the special teams and the offense. I don't think you can really separate them. And so for me, the top two Giants free agent signings were Dwayne Harris, one, and Shane Vereen, too.
Now, if we were to expand it to the top three, I'm going to throw out one guy on defense just to balance the equation out. And I'm going to go with a guy that came in a little bit late in the game. I'm going to say Jasper Brinkley was the best addition on defense in terms of what he was able to bring to the table from a free agent perspective.
Wow. That's not a bad idea. That is not a bad idea. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, because he came so late. He was not one of the guys they had signed in the offseason, so he doesn't come to mind right away as an option. But in light of what you're saying, and he certainly improved the rush defense over the second half of the year when he got in there.
And was opportunistic. Number four is fumbles and fumble recoveries.
I'm going to go with you on that. You've won me over.
All right. Well, I'm glad. Boy, that didn't take much heavy lifting today. Look at that. No argument. Short, sweet, and to the point.
You know, because You could have other contenders who you could have talked about would have been Jonathan Casillas, who played special teams.
Correct.
And played not only some linebacker, but nickel package, a lot of sub. You could also talk about, to some degree, Brandon Merriweather, because he was a starter for, what, two-thirds of the season?
Majority of the year.
Although he was then cut and then brought back. You know, you probably could talk about him
some. And he was a late addition, too, similar to Brinkley. He didn't come in until late in the game as well.
He was late. Those would be guys you would probably want to consider talking about, but I'm with you. I'll say Brinkley would be number three.
Well, Brinkley made the list in terms of top five plays that game in Tampa Bay, if you remember.
Yeah.
He was able to get the football on the hands of Doug Martin off of that. Then you had Dwayne Harris's kickoff return against the Cowboys. That made the list. Shane Vereen's performance against Carolina, which helped spark the 28-point rally. That made the list.
Yep.
Also, Dwayne Harris's punt return against the Jets. We mentioned Brinkley. And then the last one was Jonathan Casillas, who you brought up, his interception against the Philadelphia Eagles, which was tipped by JPP. So those were the top five individual play/performances by free agents who joined the team in 2015.
You know, I think sometimes people get a little bit lost when they grade a guy because he does something really well in a reserve role. And then they think he can do more in a full-time role. And then maybe when he doesn't, all of a sudden they sour on him. I'll give you a great example. Casillas is one of those guys. I think Casillas, in his proper role, is a pretty valuable guy. I think he's really good on specials. I think he can do a lot of good things in the sub package. I think when his snaps are limited, he performs at a higher efficiency. But again, there's a reason why he's been around the league for a while, and he's really never been a full-time, every-down player. Because when you start expanding his snaps, his efficiency quotient starts to go down.
But on the flip side, you could say that the reason why teams have valued him in the past, Tampa Bay, New England specifically, is because of what he brings to special teams. And you need those jack-of-all-trades type of players that
you
can fit in here or there due to injuries and so forth.
The hope is that you'll be able to keep him in that position he was designed for, and that you don't have to bring him out of the box and make him do more than perhaps you would originally intended.
So that he could be at most effective in
no
terms
question.
Of your team in performance. All right, let's open up the phone lines here. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Starting things off is Jason in New Jersey. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, yeah, so I just I got the news of Jeff Schwartz, Will Beatty, and John Deason all being released just moments ago. And I can say that I'm very happy with all three of the moves. I think all three of them should have been gone. I remember previously I called in. I said that cutting Jeff Schwartz would be a wise move because if you study John Jerry's tape, he outplayed Jeff Schwartz. I think that with Ben McAdoo as the head coach, he's going to want John Jerry to be his starting right guard next year with Bobby Hart as the backup. And that's great. John Jerry, zero sacks allowed. Probably the best pass blocker Eli Manning has ever played with in his career. I don't think that's even close. You look at Will Beatty, again, another lineman that doesn't fit McAdoo's profile. McAdoo wants wide bodies, strong, big linemen. Will Beatty's, you know, skinny. He doesn't have girth. He gets bull rushed. Didn't fit the scheme. McAdoo looked at the tape, said, Jeff Schwartz, you got beat in pass protection this year. Beatty doesn't fit the profile. They're gone. In terms of John Beeson, that was obvious. But I love these moves. I think it improves. We save, you know, $3 million with the Jeff Schwartz thing, $6 million with the Beeson thing, and then $4 million with the Beatty thing. So it's $13 million today. The New York Giants gained $13 million in cap space.
Well, first of all, be careful the numbers you quote because I don't believe those to be true or accurate. But I will also tell you there are a lot of things in those contracts that can make them very tricky to understand. And so just be careful. I'm telling you, I don't believe the number you just quoted is accurate. I'm telling you that. But I'm not going to speak officially for the team because I can't
Correct.
Do that.
Correct. We have to emphasize this, Jason. I didn't mean to cut you off, Paul, but nothing is official, Jason. I mean, whatever you threw out, I'm not saying that the media reports are off base, but nothing's official in terms of the classification of also of how perhaps these moves are going to be made. So keep that in mind, too.
Correct. There are many ways that you can part ways
exactly.
with a player.
Exactly, and that also impacts the finances.
No question.
In terms of how that plays a role in the cap. So what you're reading, what you're seeing, once again, I'm not saying it's completely off base, but since nothing's official right now, to compartmentalize the money in this place versus that place, I think is getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Jason. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's continue to move along here on the lines.
I would only add one thing about what the gentleman was saying about the reports of these players. All three of these players that are being talked about have had significant injury history. And you must take that into account, regardless of what you think about their performance or what you think that they might be able to bring to the table this year for the Giants or anybody else. You do have to take into account they have all had significant injuries during the course of their career. And those things They collect. They compile. There is a cumulative effect. You don't run away from that stuff as you get older. It does tend to wear on you, and it does tend to affect your performance one way or another. And in fact, as we talked about with Beattie, he had the rotator cuff that wound up finishing his season on injured reserve at the end of the year when everybody thought he was going to come back. So I don't even know health-wise, you know, where those three guys stand.
In terms of their mindset and so forth.
Don't even know.
And their continued future as football players. No, I think that's a fair point. I mean, Beattie, you mentioned, he missed all of last season. Also had the torn pectoral muscle in the spring. That's why he wasn't here for the start of the season. Then the shoulder injury. Beeson, we know, limited last year because of another injury that cost him the season. And then Jeff Schwartz, two games in 2014, 11 last year. So he wound up still missing a number of games last year due to injuries, too. And that was just with 2 years with the Giants.
And Beeson himself, I believe, talked about on the radio, you know, this is not something I'm saying out of school. You know, his knee was messed up. And he's going to do everything he can to try to rehab it to see if there's any chance that he could even think about playing again. But there's some doubt there. You don't know.
Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Dean in Connecticut. Dean, what's happening?
What's going on, guys? How we doing?
Doing well, Dean. How's everything with you?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, even though these moves aren't official, it seems to me that the Giants are somewhat trying to make as much cap space as possible to make a big move. And, I mean, Jay Reese has never really gone out and spent the bank on anybody really but DRC and Will Beattie. He gives a little here and a little there. But with everybody talking about maybe possibly Landon Collins being transformed into the linebacker position, that really makes me worry about safety and perhaps them spending big bank on safety the offseason. What do you think?
Well, in terms of Landon Collins being moved to linebacker, I mean, that's just pure speculation. The Giants haven't indicated anything that they're physically going to move him to a completely different position. You could certainly say he's got some versatility where he's effective in playing down in the box, but I wouldn't get too worked up that he's officially going to make the move to linebacker. In terms of, you know, going after safeties, Paul and I have discussed, as well as, you know, a number of other people who host the show here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, there are a number of names that are going to be out on the market. I mean, two that come to mind: Eric Berry of the Chiefs, but, you know, who knows if he's actually going to hit the market. And then Eric Weddle, who we were talking about earlier in San Diego, they're scheduled to be free agents.
He's on the wrong side of 30, though, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Eric Weddle is 31, correct. Eric Berry's not necessarily up there.
Yeah, but, I was worried about that. Not necessarily saying that Landon Collins was going to be moved there, but I remember the experiment with Kiwanuka, how that just – I believe that – switching Kiwanuka back from end to linebacker pretty much ruined his career. I think he should have stayed with his hand in the dirt. That's just my opinion. But as far as rebuilding the trenches, now that we just cut two offensive linemen, so we had a rookie left tackle. I mean, we're going to have to go hard at the draft or hard free agency and rebuild these trenches. And it looks like we're going to have somewhat north of $50 million in cap space. Am I correct?
Well, nothing's official from the Giants' perspective, but Jerry Reese did note after the season that financially they're in a very good position. So I would assume that they're in a position where they can be aggressive if that's the game plan that they want to pursue.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for. I'll let you guys go. I'm sure you have a lot of callers. Go Big Blue.
All right, Dean. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. In terms of the offensive line, Paul, you know, the left side, for the most part, you got youth there, so I don't think there's many question marks. In terms of the right side, at least options. You know, Bobby Hart is one guy in particular, and, you know, we've had conversations with David Deal that you could put him at right guard or right tackle, or at least give him an opportunity to compete for a starting job heading into next season.
Well, you see, the one thing you got to remember about him is that he showed a lot of flashes, but he also showed the ability to play both of those spots. And so, even though I prefer him at right guard, and I believe David Deal, you know, one of our broadcast partners, has said himself he also believes he should be competing as the starting right guard. Ultimately, I think the Giants are in a position where they've got a little flexibility there. If it turns out that during the offseason they get a couple of offensive linemen and that they start throwing them into the mix and try to figure out where they're going to fit, if it turns out that Hart's better at right tackle and the guy that they bring in and import turns out to be better at right guard, well, then that's the way it's going to line up. I don't think we can say right now February 10th, you know, concretely where Bobby Hart is going to compete, or should I say where he's going to land. I do think he's going to compete at both spots. Ultimately, I do believe he's going to be funneled in as the right guard. That's my prediction. That's not a concrete belief.
Well, because the roster is so far from being solidified, so it's impossible to know.
But it's good that they've got the ability to at least put a guy in that position where he has a chance to win a job at either spot. That's good.
And it's good that a young guy got experience in year
one
who wasn't really an every-game starter. That, I think, is a positive because now he's coming into year two, Bobby Hart, and it's not all of a sudden a deer in headlight type of philosophy. He understands the Giants system. He understands some of the offensive linemen he's played next to. I think Hart and Jerry, who one of the last callers brought up, you know, those are the two options who can come in. They know the system. They can battle for spots on the right side. In terms of any other options, who knows who the personnel groupings are going to look like because we haven't gone into free agency and we haven't gone into the draft. But I think you can at least assume or speculate that there will be some new faces that will come in and probably have an opportunity to compete for some starting jobs. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. Rayvon is in Virginia. Rayvon, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon to you. What do you have for us?
First thing I want to start off by saying, the first time I ever called here to Giants.com, basically I had lost my breath. I was talking to Paul, and I lost my breath, and I got kind of nervous. And I don't know what happened because I'm 35 years old. I've been breathing for 35 years, and that was kind of weird. But
Hey, man, don't worry about it. I've been losing my breath ever since I was born.
Rayvon, don't worry. Also, Paul tends to have that effect on grown adults as well as youngsters. So, you know, you're not necessarily in a league of your own.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you remember that or not, but I'm fine now.
Good.
And, that's good to hear.
You know, as far as, you know, I called last at the beginning of the year, and I started to get on a couple of the Giants fans for getting on Jerry Reese and talking about the free agents we had signed, in particular Dwayne Harris, and you see how that turned out basically with everything he did during the year.
Sure.
Yeah.
We just talked about that.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty good sign, and I agree with all three of the cuts today. Basically, they had pretty good contracts basically to where we could free up some cap space. As far as our team is concerned, I think we have a very good chance to fill out these roster spots and these holes. It's a pretty deep draft this year, which is very good for us. I think we'll be able to get a veteran safety, free safety, to go along with Landon Collins, basically, to help groom him. The defensive linemen are deep this year in the draft. The linebackers are deep. You have several, tweeners as far as safeties that can cover and play a cornerback, so that's very good for us. I'm not too sure about Prince Amukamara. I'm kind of torn on him. If you had asked me this last year, I would have said, you know, we need to keep him.
Right.
And you know, let him keep going. He kind of regressed this year, and he stays dinged up a little bit too much.
Yeah, that durability thing, with him, or lack thereof, continues to be a thorn in my side every time I try to project as to where he should be, what his number should be, and if he should even be here. It's that one is so hard to chew on. It really is.
Right. And he is a first-round pick. And, I mean, the most important thing for us going forward is going to be continuity. Basically, we need, you know, between our offensive linemen, the linebackers, it even leaked into our wide receivers, which was the strongest, point on our depth chart. The continuity just is not there, and that's just as important as having good players that can go out and play for you and produce. If they're not out there to be able to produce, then, you know, you're basically playing with a bunch of backups and switching players in and out. There's no continuity, and I would like to see us go back to, you know, these men work so hard to get themselves ready and prepared for the season. I would like to see us go back to, you know, our Bill Parcells days to where, you know, I remember in the Saints game, we're going back and forth. You know, the defense, we all seen it. No defense, basically. You know, we get to a point to where we're getting over the 50-yard line and we're at like a 4th-and-1 or something like that, and we're punting the ball. You know, I'm not saying you have to go for it every time. You have to take some chances. Put the game in your offense's hands, especially how the rules are in the NFL now with the receivers and defensive backs. Go for the 1 yard. The men work so hard.
You know,
put the game in your hands.
I love what you just said.
That's my opinion.
I love what you just said because, let's face it, And I know a lot of fans don't want to hear about this because they just want to think that everything's in an incubator and you just do things by the book, mm-hmm. Football 101. Tom Coughlin made a lot of decisions this year, you know, in terms of philosophically where they were going with their play calling and their offense and if they were going to punt the ball or if they were going to go for it or if they were going to pass or if they were going to run because he knew that his defense wasn't holding up. And you know what? If you peel back the layers of the onion and you understand the position that he was in and he's thinking to himself, okay, look, I know that we've got some Achilles heels here on the other side of the ball, and I've seen what that other team can do, and I know that we probably are going to have a hard time stopping them in this situation or given these factors. He had to go away from the book. He had to go away from Football 101 several times this year to make decisions that on the face of them look like they were illogical and not wise. But the truth of the matter was they were incredibly intelligent because he knew and understood the circumstances and some of the lack thereof assets that the Giants had on the other side of the ball. So I love what you just said because you're right. You want to see the Giants go back to playing Football 101 by the book, and you can do that when you have the pieces to do that. And the Giants haven't had the pieces.
Great, Von.
I just have one more thing to add to that, Paul. You're absolutely right. But I have one example, basically, in the Saints game. Like I said, we're going back and forth. Nobody's stopping anybody. We were fortunate enough to, you know, when we went up and when we tied the game and then we went up with the interception, I think, with McBride, and we went up. We got the ball back again and had a chance to go up by more. Now, we haven't been stopping them all day. We were over the 50-yard line. I said to myself, I said, we went to commercial. I said, Tom, please don't punt this ball to them because we're not going to stop them. You've seen we haven't stopped them all day. Basically, in my mind, I'm thinking if we punt them the ball, even if they fair catch it or whatever, they get it at the 1 yard line. If they get back to the point to where we punted the ball, it was a waste of a punt. And in two plays, middle of the field, they got right back to the spot where we punted it from. We might as well have went for it, and we didn't stop them.
You know what? All I can tell you is this season was full of interesting scenarios. Certainly the most bizarre season that I have ever been through, and I've been doing this now. I'm going into my 34th year. So trust me when I tell you, it was nuts. And there were going to be isolated instances where you're right, where you just shake your head and you say, you know what, it just didn't work out. Maybe that wasn't the way to go. But for the most part, trust me when I tell you, Tom Coughlin, when he went unorthodox in a number of his decisions this year, there was good reason to do so. And you had to really understand where he was coming from to be able to accept those reasons.
Well, and Rayvon, appreciate the phone call. One thing I do want to clarify, though, looking back at that Saints-Giants game, after McBride had the pick six and the Giants went up by a touchdown, they kicked off, and then the Saints drove down the field for the game-tying touchdown. So the Giants never then had another possession where they had the chance to decide to go for it or punt. Based on how that game played out. Then after the Saints get the game-tying touchdown, they kick off, and that's where the Giants had the special teams issue, and then obviously the Saints were in a position to go up for the game-winning field goal. So, I mean, they really weren't put in that position. I know Rayvon's point was throughout the season, I would agree.
I understand what he was saying.
And I understood what he was saying, too. But I felt, based on what you were laying out there, Paul, more often than not, there were times this year, compared to previous years, where Tom Coughlin decided to go for it on 4th-and-1. There was a 4th-and-2 in the Jets game, I believe. And at times, the Giants were not executing where they were even picking up that 1 yard on the ground. For example, if memory serves me correct, I think there was a play in the Eagles game in Philadelphia. They decided to go for it. I think it was a 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2. Rashad Jennings ran to the left. He was stopped. They couldn't sometimes execute those short yardage pickups even on the ground.
You know, here's the bottom line. If you have players who are executing, okay, then whatever you decide to call, you got a pretty good chance that people are going to be okay with it, even if it doesn't work, because there's good common sense behind it. There's logic behind it. You have a reasonable expectation that my guy's going to be able to run the play that I want the way it needs to be run. And if the other team just makes a great play, you tip your cap to them and you say, okay, coach made a good call and it just didn't work because the other team made a play. A lot of folks can swallow that. They can accept that. Well, now here's the problem. Put yourself in the coach's shoes when he says to himself, I know this is the play that we should run. I know what the smart thing is to do, but I've seen enough evidence that I'm not so sure my guys can even execute it properly. Now what do you do?
It's almost a catch-22 type of situation.
And Coach Coughlin found himself in that position a great deal of times this year, which is why me understanding what he was dealing with, I was not nearly as confrontational with his decisions as a lot of fans were who did not understand those things.
The big theme to me when you look back at last season, I think Tom Coughlin, and this is just my opinion again, was coming from the philosophy where he had to be a little bit more aggressive on offense than perhaps in previous years, because if I could pick up that first down, Paul, and I could take a little bit more time off the clock, then I'm going to keep my defense off the field and I'm not going to put them in a position where they have to seal the game for me and so forth.
But then there were other times where he wasn't getting the proper pass protection or he wasn't getting any run blocking at all, which then said, well, wait a minute. I'd like to be able to be more aggressive offensively for the reasons you just said, but now I don't know if I can because our guys aren't really getting it done execution-wise today. So now, again, it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't. He was in a lot of tough spots this year.
We want to remember, fans, that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's head back to the lines. 201-939-4513. Gerald is in Virginia. Gerald, what's happening?
Hello.
Gerald,
good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Good afternoon to you, Gerald. What's happening?
Yeah. Hello, guys. How y'all doing?
I'm doing well. How's everything with you, Gerald?
Oh, good, good. I got a quick topic. Everything's fine. New Year's going great.
Good, I got
one topic about Victor Cruz. Now, isn't he under contract year, or he's still under contract for another couple of years or so far, wherever? I don't know. But I'm thinking is, without him being in Bob McAdoo's system, is it possible that is he going to be any kind of hindrance to the offense by him getting in sync with the rest of the players on offense?
Well, I don't think he's going to be a hindrance. I mean, to answer your question, he's due to be a free agent in 2019. So, number one, he's on the books for the next few years. He's not due to be a free agent. In terms of him being a hindrance, I mean, he's been in McAdoo's system. It was a limited time because of injuries, obviously. But, I mean, if they get him back out on the field, he's not going to hold this offense back. He's going to be another asset that they can utilize to complement Odell Beckham at this point. The problem is they haven't had him on the field for much to at least work out some of the kinks and get everybody else on the same page.
I would only say this. The sooner he gets on the field, the better. I'd love to see him there at minicamp. I really would. Now, I don't know. Again, I don't know exactly what the plan is for him, other than I understand he is progressing well and on whatever schedule the medical staff has given him. But, yeah, the more reps he and Eli get over the summer is going to definitely help this offense regardless.
What else you got, Gerald? All right.
Looks I think
like
he's gone.
Gerald answered
okay.
the question. Okay. Appreciate you weighing in. Short, sweet, to the point. Steve is on Staten Island. Steve, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, Lance, good afternoon. Hey, Paul, how are you, buddy?
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you.
It's always good to talk to you, Paul. Nobody does it better than you, man.
Thank you, man.
All right. Well, listen, I guess you guys know you saw the same Super Bowl I did, so I guess we've all always subscribed to that well-known theory, right, that defense wins championships. And that was never more proven until that Super Bowl. And I got to tell you, if you guys remember how many times I used to call in and before the Giants had a big game, and, you know, the keys and the success and what to do to win. And my battle cry was, to listen, just get pressure. And you know what, Paul, you brought up a good point before. You weren't – Coach Coughlin wasn't really working with the best. He tried to make do with what he had. And, you know, my basically my question to you guys is, because I'm going to keep it short and sweet, is, you know for a fact that defensively this team is hurting. And, you know, I would hope come next season – when we get ahead, we stay ahead. We don't have those mental lapses, that lack of communication that you heard so much, that caused a lot of games to go bad. You know, this team needs 300-400 pounds of beef on that line. You know, I'm just curious as to who do you think they're going to, you know, bring in. Because, listen, I like Ayers. I really do. And,
so
you know,
do
with
I.
JPP, I told you earlier, me, I give him a one-year contract, and we play it from there. You know, who do you guys think that they're going to bring in more or less to beef up this line? And what do you see in the back end? Because I don't think Amuka Mara is your answer. I want to be honest with you. I mean, to me, I watch him get beat on a lot of deep plays. And, you know, I just think it's just not fair. A guy like Cromartie, who's pretty much out there by himself. And Landon Collins, I'm telling you, I said it last year, I like this kid. This kid's going to be a good player with this team. So I'm just curious to see, you know, think who you guys, if you have any names, you know, well, what do you think they're going to, who you think that they might bring in to kind of restore what was once, obviously, as you guys know, a pride with that Giant defense. Thanks for taking my call. Paul, you are the best.
Thanks, my
All right,
man.
Steve,
I appreciate
the phone call.
Steve, honestly, I know you want names, and so does everybody else, but as we tried to tell you at the start of the show, the list of available players is going to be fluid, and that's already starting to happen this week, as we've seen with teams getting rid of certain guys. We've mentioned styles and types of players who would fit the desire of somebody I would be looking for if I were the Giants, and that's about the best way I can say it to couch it, because to say that it's this guy or that guy, it's not fair. You just don't know what the pool is. But a guy like a Mario Williams type would certainly be helpful to this front seven. A guy like an Eric Weddle type in terms of age, experience, what he has brought to the table, that would be a guy who would fit all the boxes. Guys like that, all right, are guys who I would be strongly looking at. A Malik Jackson, the types of things that he does, the types of his age and his and his abilities. Look at your boxes. This is what I want you to do, Steve. You could do this as well as we can right now because, again, the names are fluid. Put together a checklist of what you think when you look at the Giants and you say, okay, I think they need this position, this position, this position. Now, when you go to each of those positions, put together a checklist. Do I want a guy who's older or younger or in the middle of his career? Do I want to go free agency because I know I'm going to have to spend money, a lot of money, or a medium amount of money? Or do I want to go draft pick? Do I want to go high in the draft? Do I want to go low in the draft? These are the kinds of things you have to do when you analyze this. Literally make a checklist, not only for the positions, but then each individual position. And look at all the different options and all the different variables. And then you say, okay, is there a guy now in the pool of free agents that checks all the boxes?
Well, I think it's also important to come from the mindset. And, you know, you were talking about age. One other name, by the way, that I want to throw out who I think meets age, meets pass rush, meets upside is Olivier Vernon from the Miami Dolphins, who's a good, strong edge rusher.
Who the Dolphins will try to retain.
Correct.
They've said it's going to be hard, but they're going to try.
When you have Ndamukong Suh on the books, it makes a lot of things challenging. That would be another name to answer Steve's question.
I like how you said the other day with the Eagles, Walter Thurmond would be a guy who would fill the boxes at safety, but we don't know what the Eagles are doing with him. He may or may not be available.
With a new coaching staff and so forth, it changes sometimes the outlook of the organization.
You know, for us to discuss names, it's hard. We can discuss types of guys who might fit the profile, but to give you names, right now it's too premature.
Well, I wanted real quickly before we get back to the lines, Paul, and this should address what Steve was asking and what you were touching on. Do you want to look at it from this perspective this offseason? You know you have Jonathan Hankins as pretty much one of the centerpieces of your defensive line, who's still relatively young. And if you go back, because, you know, Steve brought up the fact of getting the Giants back to the time where they were consistent in terms of the pass rush. Well, what made them consistent? What made them consistent, Paul, were a few factors. Number one, you had depth. You had a variety of options on the defensive line who you were able to rotate. But you also had a group that you built that work together over the course of years. And what I mean by that is if you go the route of some up there aged free agents, I don't know if you can rely on them being together for X amount of years. If you pinpoint with the draft and with guys who are in free agency that are in that ballpark of 26 to 28, 26 to 29, you have the ability to not only invest in these guys for 1 year, but you can keep this crew together for years to come. And I think that may be the smart and wise policy to take on so that you could get back to the JPP, the OCs, the Kiwanukas, the Tucks, where you didn't have them just for 1 year to toy with. You had them for 4 to 5 years. That's important.
And I think it depends on the position you're talking about. I think on the whole, you have a very good philosophy to do it that way. But like John and I have been talking about, well, what are you going to do at safety? I think you want to bring in an older safety because you want a big brother for Landon Collins. I don't necessarily want a guy who's played maybe 3 years in this league because he's on the younger side, yet he's still got a lot to learn himself. And I want Landon Collins to be able to sponge off of the guy who's played 6, 7, 8, 9 years next to him because of his inexperience and his youth. So I tend to agree with you for the most part. That's kind of what you like to do in most situations. But I do think in specific instances, you really do want the older guy. And the safety spot for me is one where I would want it.
Well, and it makes sense for
me. I mean, McCourty was an older guy.
Correct.
When we were talking to him
but
last
still,
year. A little bit on the older
side. Young enough where
young
I think
enough.
You could have built around him
young
with
enough.
Landon Collins. But now that you have Landon Collins, who is on this end of the spectrum.
You really got
to
go
to
older.
Balance it out, you want somebody who's closer to this side. And remember, you're talking about two safeties that are on the field at the same time. I was referring to four defensive linemen that are on the
right.
field at the same time, who are at least going to be on the field for first and second down together, depending on obviously the configuration. I want four guys who I think I can grow together with up the food chain.
The beauty about what you're saying is it worked perfectly with the Giants during their two Super Bowl runs with the defensive ends. They had guys who were constantly overlapping in terms of their contracts and their age and
exactly.
their youth. You know, they were overlapping Strahan and Osi and Tuck and JPP and Kiwanuka. And it was like the ball just kept rolling because there was a new guy who just fit his teeth right into it and just allowed the thing to keep going.
And
it was beautiful.
And part of that is because of the age. The fact that if
no
everybody's
question.
In the same vicinity, you can continue to work that philosophy. Whereas if you have guys in your 30s, then you have guys in your low 20s, it doesn't necessarily
well,
work out that way.
Look, the old timers will remember. The Giants in 64, when they went to the championship game, and Tittle in 63, they went to the championship game and Tittle got all beaten up. And Giants fans will remember the next year in 64, it seemed like the whole roster was just old. All at once, they all got old. And all of a sudden, the dark period began. I mean, that's what happens when you don't have the staggering of the ages and the staggering of the lengths of the contracts. That's what happens. You hit a brick wall, and now all of a sudden, bang, you got a huge rebuilding process on your hands.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening? Joe, are you there?
Joe, hello.
Hello, guys. Hey, great to talk to you. Sorry I tuned in late.
That's okay. Turn down the volume and let's get to it.
And Joe, I was going to say, step a little closer to the phone here. You seem a little shy here on this Wednesday.
I was just rushing in from outside doing some work there, and I ran late. But what I want to mention, I don't know if he's talked about, I know you were talking about it the other day on Cam Newton there about his explanation. Well, he gave another one. I don't know if you've talked about it.
Haven't necessarily gotten into that. I mean, we've been pretty much focusing on Giants topics today. But what do you have on Cam?
Well, I just say he gave another explanation yesterday saying that the reporter asked him why he didn't go for that fumble. He said he might have hurt his leg if he would have went for it. If you don't put out in the Super Bowl, when are you going to put out? I mean, every player on the team could say, well, I don't want to go over the middle for that pass or stretch out. I might get hurt. This ain't the Pro Bowl. This was the Super Bowl.
Joe, the Super Bowl is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You never know if you're going to get back. And if you can't give 100% on every single play, then something is wrong with you.
Yeah, he's just... The more he talks, the more he's opening himself up for getting slammed, I think.
Yeah, good point.
One other thing I just want to say there, from watching the Super Bowl game with the linebackers, I think the linebackers may go first again. You know, more people might want to go defense now after seeing the linebackers, you know what I mean, sticking down Cam there, you know what I mean, that they might want to go more defense, where other years everybody's after the receivers and stuff like that. That's all I have to say. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. The other thing to keep in mind, you know, when we start to make generalizations because of the way the linebackers played in the Super Bowl, now all of a sudden that's going to change the landscape of the NFL. It was interesting, Paul, because you had two different defenses in the Super Bowl. Denver runs a 3-4,
yeah,
and Carolina runs a 4-3. So how they use their linebackers varies depending on what they call for within the defensive scheme. I don't know if, based on what Joe is indicating, that people are going to watch Carolina, watch Denver across the NFL and say, we now have to go out and get ourselves X amount of linebackers, or we need to change now from a 4-3 to a 3-4. I wouldn't necessarily go that far.
You know what I will say, though, and the NFL has always been cyclical, and it's always been a copycat league. And when the Giants had their two runs, a lot of people were talking about, well, pass rush is certainly the big key, and you want to get as many guys as you can on that defensive line. Then for a couple of years there, when Seattle went to the back-to-back Super Bowls, people were saying, well, you know, pass rush is good, but if you have great cover corners, and if you're really physical in the secondary, in the Legion of Boom, boy, everyone's got to go out and draft some really high picks in the secondary. And maybe you don't have to have a great pass rush, but if you have a great secondary, maybe that's the way to go. And then all of a sudden now, after Sunday's game, it's back to, if you have a great pass rush, man, that's the way to go.
Well, I think Seattle, though, brought up also the shutdown corners, but also showed depth on the defensive line is important. Because remember, they brought in Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, who were pretty much every down starters on their old teams. And then they became rotational players on Seattle. So, if anything, I thought Seattle put more stock in the Giants' philosophy from a few years prior, which is depth on the defensive line.
That's true.
Rotation of defensive linemen is important. Denver, I think, showed that too, and as did Carolina. I mean, look at Carolina. Carolina relied on Coney Ealy, who was pretty much the backup to Jared Allen before Allen got injured, and then Ealy stole the show and became the star. Why? Well, you got depth, so you're able to get away with that.
I go back to Football 101. George Young taught me these principles many, many, many years ago. You have to have four key components if you're going to build yourself into a playoff team. You got to have the franchise quarterback. You've got to have the protector at left tackle. You've got to have a dominant pass rusher, whether it be a linebacker or a D lineman. You have to have a dominant pass rusher, and then you have to have a cover corner. If you have those four things, you've already got the foundation laid for a team that can then become a playoff squad. But if you don't have those four things, you're swimming upstream the entire time.
201-939-4513, Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we hear from Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Len. How's everything with you?
Good, good. Hey, Paul, just one more point. We were talking yesterday about the Super Bowl, and I was giving, you know, grades on the value of the program and so forth. You know, the NFL is a trillion-dollar entity, and obviously I'm exaggerating. And they're playing the Super Bowl in an $800 million facility with advanced technology. And they're holding post-game news conferences back-to-back, only separated by a curtain. I mean, come on. You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. Well, I mean, just looking at the YouTube things of Newton, this is not support or condemnation for Newton. I'm just saying, you could actually hear the voice of the guy on the other side of the curtain. I mean, come on, NFL. You can do a lot better than that. I can't believe that that's what they do for 49er games.
I will say this to you, Len.
Teams news conference behind a curtain while the 49ers are talking on the
other side? Len, I will say this to you.
Side?
In some instances, you would be very surprised at how primitive the post-game setups can be around the league. And perhaps this has brought some of that to light. However, if I may just add one caveat to what you've just said, you know, when I was, 4 years old, mom and dad said, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That does not excuse, even if Cam Newton heard what was said on the other side of that curtain, and I've read the quotes apparently as to what the defensive back said. My goodness, if that was enough to bristle his feelings, then he has serious, serious confidence issues.
Well, it just seems like it should be a little more sophisticated.
I understand.
And that
point is very well taken.
The logistics.
Hey, let me make a comment on releases that take place before free agency starts. And the guys that get released this week and all the way up to March the 9th are guys who are still under contract. They've got a year, or in the case of Beattie, 2 years left on his contract. A team must really want to sever relations with that player when they cut them during this period of time. They don't want to restructure. They don't want to re-engineer. They don't want to lower his salary. They just want the guy gone.
Well, Len, and I'm not speaking to the names that we've talked about today,
but
there are plausible scenarios here where teams may have asked guys to reduce their number and they didn't want to do it, and so they were shown the door. You have guys who may medically have issues to where, you know what, hey, it'd be nice to have him around if he could still play, but we're not so sure that he can. Remember when Phil Sims was cut by the Giants back in the spring of 94? It was simple. George Young sat there and said, he's coming off rotator cuff surgery. There's a salary cap. We can't wait till September to find out if he can throw a football. And so they cut Phil Sims.
Paul, just a quick point on that, and Lance, I'd appreciate your opinion here. Remember, Victor Cruz falls into this category, too. He's got years left in his contract. They're not, or they haven't yet, announced that they're severing ways with Victor.
We know nothing about what this organization's planning for Victor Cruz, to be fair. We know nothing. We don't. Nobody does.
Well,
how do you know? Look, I'm not. All I'm saying to you is, Len, you and I and Lance and Dave, our producer, we're all sitting here, and we can't tell you if Victor Cruz is a Giant tomorrow or not because we don't know. Nobody knows.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
So
and
don't make an assumption
saying,
and put that out there as evidence. You can't.
As of right now, they have cut Victor a little slack. They haven't released him. I mean, he's still a Giants, whereby
he still is
likely. And again, I know you know
there's
it hasn't
plenty
been,
of time for this to go
been
either way
yet by the team. But those three guys have. The Giants have essentially said, we don't care what you say, what you do. We don't want your back.
Well, but Len, here's the thing. I understand the point you're making because it's rather quickly. It's only 2 days after you can actually start cutting players. So from a timetable perspective, yes, you can maybe make that assumption. But we don't know the type of conversations that took place behind closed doors, as Paul was touching on. So for all we know, they may have met those players halfway at the table and said, we want you back under these guidelines and these circumstances, and then the player didn't want to do it, the team didn't want to meet. It could really go both ways. So to say that these three in particular were not wanted and anybody else still on the roster is definitely wanted, think that's a real big assumption right now.
You can't assume anything,
Len.
You
can't. Can I say one thing about Beeson? You know, of the three that, you know, that people are talking about, and again, we don't know if that's final or not, but of those three, I think the Beeson one disappoints me the most, and let me tell you why. They could have waited on John Beeson and counseled John into retirement. I mean, there's no reason for John Beeson's career.
All right.
And now maybe Beeson says,
Len,
I want to play
Len,
again.
Hold on.
And then
hold
the
on.
Giants made
again,
a decision.
You're making a comment based on an assumption.
All we know now,
the reports are that these three players in the Giants have parted ways. Okay. We do not know if any of these players have decided to retire. We don't know if these players were cut. We do not know that. How do you know John Beeson hasn't decided to retire? How do you know that? You don't. Len,
Paul, let me just say this, and then, you know, you can get on to other callers. Thank you very much for taking my call. But, Paul, everything's built around assumptions. I mean, it's
But you can't do that. You can't do that.
Len,
here's what I'm going to tell you, Len. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Yeah. If, in fact, the paperwork has gone through on these three supposed moves, it will be done by 4 o'clock today. That's the end of the NFL's business day.
Right.
And then official announcements will come out, maybe even before that. But by 4 o'clock today, the NFL hands out its official releases on the business announcements of the day and the transactions that have occurred. At that point, you will know definitively in, what is that, another 3 hours?
How it's categorized.
If anybody was cut, released, waived, retired, why not wait 3 hours?
Okay.
Call us tomorrow and talk about if Beeson retired or not.
Hey, guys, as usual, thanks for taking my
call.
Okay,
really Len. Take care.
Appreciate the phone call.
You can see what I'm getting at.
I completely understand. That's why, you know, we prefaced at the beginning of the show the multiple media reports that are out there. We're acknowledging that there are media reports out there and that they're parting ways with those three players that we mentioned, Jeff Schwartz, Will Beatty, and John Beeson. It's important to emphasize, as Paul just had a back and forth with Len, that we don't know how to classify how they're parting ways. Now, when you part ways with a player, it could come in a variety of different ways.
Sure.
Retirement and release are two in particular that come into mind. Until we know the specifics, we don't know if it's the team's mindset. We don't know if it's the player's mindset. We don't know if it's a meeting or a common ground between both parties. That's why it's hard to make those generalizations. The player wasn't wanted. The team didn't want the player. The player was asked to take a cut, and the player didn't want it. there's so many different coulda, woulda, shouldas that could play.
The other
thing
that many fans don't understand, and I'm not trying to be insulting, but a lot of fans don't understand, when you cut a veteran player who was under contract, you can designate him as a June 1st cap cut, or you can designate him as a cap cut today.
Which impacts how the finances play out.
Absolutely. It has a dramatic impact on your salary cap this year, or if you're going to carry money over into ensuing years, depending upon the length of the contract. Which is why I'm telling everybody out there, even if now you say X player has been cut, well now, was he a June 1st cap cut or was he not? Because that affects the cap number. So don't believe anything that you're reading right now, because it's all assumptions and speculation until the concrete evidence is in and the facts are in as to who is no longer going to be here and how was it that they were designated. Until that stuff happens, don't assume anything.
And if anything does come down officially by later today, clearly we will talk about
it'll
it.
It'll get right on Giants.com.
Details. Correct.
It'll be posted
and
right
then
away.
We'll further
guys
discuss
were,
it on
guys were either
show.
Released or guys retired. You'll see it right away.
Absolutely. So we certainly appreciate everybody for chiming in. Once again, Justin Tuck will be joining us on tomorrow's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. So if you have a question you want us to ask Justin Tuck, he is going to be fielding questions from fans. You can send them in to #AskTuck. You could also send them in directly to Paul and I. He's at Giants WFAN. I'm at Lance Medow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So feel free to send those in before tomorrow's show. We're looking forward to talking to Justin Tuck. And if any official transactions take place, Paul and I will get into that in greater details. I think we'll have a little bit more clarity once we see the language
exactly.
And how these parting of ways took place.
Hey, been a fun show, and appreciate everyone for calling and listening. Certainly had a lot of excitement and enthusiasm today, and it was good to actually have some things to talk about.
Yes, indeed. Well, this could be the beginning of a busy offseason, as we'd like to say. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.